Hello, welcome to yet another edition of Ebenezer Reformed Church's online Sunday school class. We continue today, although with a different backdrop, with our series of epistolary examples and coming today to Paul's first letter to Timothy. Now, obviously, this is going to be a little bit different from the letters from Paul that we've looked at so far because this is a letter to an individual, but it is a pastoral letter. And there's significance in that, not merely in that it's directed to somebody who's a pastor, but that because it's directed to somebody who is functioning as a pastor, it's also meant for the congregation as well. In other words, Paul is addressing Timothy primarily, and he's addressing Timothy about the work that Timothy is supposed to be doing in Ephesus. But there are a few places where it comes through that Paul meant this letter to be heard more widely than just by Timothy. For instance, in 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, where it says, "Let no one despise your youth." Now, that is a command that is directed to Timothy, but the grammatical form in Greek lets us know that it's actually a command for other people. In other words, it's not entirely up to Timothy whether or not people despise his youth, but anybody who hears this would be reminded that they're not supposed to do that. The fact that Timothy was, relatively speaking, at any rate, a young man, was not to detract from the value placed on his ministry. But the reason we mention that verse at the moment is just to show that 1 Timothy is directed to Timothy as an individual and as an individual pastor, but it's meant to be overheard. And so we learn from that that there is a way to speak to somebody that is edifying also for others who are around. In other words, it's possible to have a conversation that's predominantly one-on-one, but if other people are listening, if other people happen to hear some of that, that it's also possible to make it edifying for them as well. Now, although this is a letter that is written to an individual, although, as we just said, to be overheard in a sense by others, although it's a letter written to an individual, yet there are a number of similarities with letters that Paul writes to other people. He still does the greeting, he still does the expression of goodwill, but you notice it changes a little bit. He says to Timothy, a true son in the faith. He still wishes for grace to be upon him. He expands it a little bit, grace, mercy, and peace from God our Father and Jesus Christ our Lord. And so you see that some of the principles that apply to communicating with groups of Christians hold true also when communicating with individual Christians. It's good to start off with positive words, with words which express our affection, with words that express our well wishes, with words that express how we view them, positively speaking. And so Paul begins by writing to Timothy, a true son in the faith. He is commending Timothy by that. And he appeals to the affection that there is between them along these lines in this relationship when he says, for instance, in chapter 1, verse 18, "This charge I commit to you, son Timothy." So he continues to speak from that standpoint of a strong relationship, from that standpoint of fatherly affection for Timothy. Now, there's some other points that we can learn that are not just review, that are not just adapting what applied in dealing with groups of Christians to dealing with individual Christians. And this point could have been made from earlier letters as well, but it's very visible in 1 Timothy that one of the ways that Paul uses to communicate, to get his point across, is to talk about himself, to use his own example. He does that in chapter 1, verses 12 through 16. He does that also a little later on in the book when, for instance, chapter 3, verses 14 and 15 as well. He deals with some of that, some of his own example also, in the other pastoral letters as well. So there's something to be learned from that, and that is that sometimes the best way to communicate, sometimes the best way to get your point across in a way that is godly, in a way that's honest, in a way that's truthful, in a way that's loving, in a way that's respectful of other people, is to share your own experiences. Paul is not shy about doing that to anyone, and how much less is he going to be shy when he's communicating with Timothy, his true son in the faith. Now, there's a few other points that we can add about communication, specifically to individuals, specifically in this kind of a relationship. For instance, it's fairly notorious, fairly well known, that in 1 Timothy, Paul gives advice that is maybe not applicable to everyone. For instance, 1 Timothy 5, verse 23, "No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities." Now, that obviously is probably not something that you would say to a whole congregation. If you have a whole congregation that is experiencing stomach issues and frequent infirmities, maybe there's a need for some kind of intervention beyond adding a little bit of wine to their daily routine. But in a case like this, where he's speaking to an individual, it is appropriate. It also demonstrates that godly concern embraces body as well as soul. Paul is concerned for Timothy, his true son in the faith, in terms of his own spiritual flourishing, in terms of the success of his ministry, but also in terms of his bodily health. So the basic idea that we're getting at there then is something along the lines of adaptability. Paul goes over some of the same ground. He uses some of the same techniques, but he doesn't forget to whom he's speaking. He doesn't have a one-size-fits-all formula. And that is a very helpful reminder for people, for Christians, especially for those who, for whatever reason, tend to have a lot of conversations with different people. Obviously, in Timothy's case, that would come up in his pastoral work. And it's very easy for counselors, pastors, others who are looked to for advice in one way or another, to kind of fall into a rut, to develop a general pattern, and then just to sort of say the same thing every time. Oh, this person needs my speech about anxiety. This person needs my speech about fearfulness. This person needs my speech about this. This person needs my speech about that. But it shouldn't be just one speech for every occasion. It shouldn't be one particular set of things that are always said when you have given a rough or a broad diagnosis. People are individuals. People have unique situations. There's different combinations. Of course, there's similarities. And of course, a lot of the same truths will apply. Timothy needs grace, just like the Corinthians, just like everybody else to whom Paul writes. There's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of things that you can share over and over and over again. And there's certainly no point in being hesitant about that. There's no point in being coy about that. But it shouldn't become just a memorized spiel that's given. You hear a particular cue, somebody's talking to you, and maybe you hear the word anxiety, and boom, anxiety spiel is what comes back out. Paul was adaptable. Paul took the trouble to understand the situation which he was addressing by letter, and to tailor, to be specific. You can see that, for instance, if you compare 1 Timothy and Titus. They're both pastoral letters. They're both written to men who are in similar situations, but they're not the same. They go over some of the same ground, but they don't do it in exactly the same way. You can see that also if you think about the similarities and differences between Colossians and Ephesians. Colossians and Ephesians are very similar, sister epistles in many ways, closely related, but they're not the same. because the Ephesian church and the Colossian church were not the same. So Paul didn't tell them the exact same things. So what we have talked about so far, I think that word adaptability is a good one to sort of summarize the different concerns. Paul adopts a similar approach in that he's positive, he's commending, he reminds Timothy of the relationship between them, he appeals to him in these ways. There's a difference in that it's an overheard conversation, a conversation that was meant to be overheard to some degree, but then there is that individual adaptability where he remembers Timothy, and although he expects other people to listen, he's not afraid, he's not shy about addressing Timothy directly. So godly communication, obviously it includes those elements of being thankful for people, of desiring the best for them, of commending them as possible, and then of adaptability or of particularity, of not forgetting to whom you are speaking. And that relates not only to content, it also relates to manner, to your overall approach. I don't know that Paul would give the advice to everybody to take a little wine, but he had a relationship with Timothy where that was perfectly appropriate, where it demonstrated his concern for Timothy. So in speaking to people, we need to remember who we're talking to in terms of what we need to say, but then also in terms of how we need to say it, what sort of a relationship is there, and how a particular topic, whatever content needs to be addressed, should be addressed. Now, there's another thing that emerges from 1 Timothy that I don't remember emerging so clearly in any of the previous letters we looked at, and that is that one of the ways to persuade or to motivate people is to hold out for them the reward of a good course of action. And of course, when I say it like that, you understand this isn't something revolutionary, this isn't something new. You can find that in the Gospels, in the Old Testament, you can find that in the other letters of Paul. But what I'm driving at is in 1 Timothy 4, verse 6, where Paul says, "If you instruct the brethren in these things, you will be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished in the words of faith and of the good doctrine which you have carefully followed." In other words, he's holding out to Timothy a very positive motivation. Here's a teaching ministry that you're supposed to engage in. There are some challenges. There are some difficulties. It involves contradicting some error. It may be involved maintaining some unpopular or easily misunderstood truths. What was Timothy's motivation to do that? Well, Paul says you'll be a good minister of Jesus Christ if you do that. He appeals to Timothy's desire to please the Lord and says, this is the way to do that. As I say, that's not necessarily revolutionary, but what Paul is doing with that is he's appealing to what he already knows Timothy wants. He's appealing, in a sense, to Timothy's identity as a servant of Christ and saying, this is the right way forward in light of that. That's not selfish. That's not manipulative, because it's true and because it's possible to appeal to Timothy on that level because of Timothy's good qualities, because Timothy does desire to be a good minister of Jesus Christ. But that then has a lesson for us about godly communication, about godly ways to motivate people. And that is that when we know, because we know them well enough, when we know that they have a desire to do the right thing, it's possible to encourage them in that by pointing out how this, in Timothy's case, teaching these things, is doing the right thing, how it does lead to a good outcome for them personally. And of course, we need to be careful there not to become manipulative with this, not to understand what somebody values, what they would like to think of themselves, and then say, now if you do exactly what I want, you'll be living up to that. That is not what Paul is doing. It looks like what Paul was doing, it can come across to the person we're victimizing as what Paul was doing, but it's really a very different thing. Paul doesn't say this so that Timothy will do something that's convenient or that's good for Paul. Paul talks this way so that Timothy will be encouraged and strengthened in doing what he ought to do anyway. It's a help to Timothy. It's not a manipulation. It's an encouragement. It's not about exercising control. So we ought to be honest and careful with ourselves in this regard, that when we use this kind of a motivational approach, an encouraging approach, we are genuinely concerned for the well-being of the person to whom we're talking. If we're not, we run the risk of simply becoming manipulative and controlling, and that is not by any means okay. But it is helpful to realize that there's more than one way to motivate people. You can exhort them, you can show them that something is their duty, you can inspire them by a good example, and Paul does all of those things. He does them to some extent in 1 Timothy, but he also does them in other letters. But then there's also this idea. You know what they want. You know what that they want to do the right thing. Well, show them how what they want is fulfilled in living in a particular way or doing a particular thing. In Timothy's case here, teaching these particular doctrines. And it's helpful to know that there's more than one way to encourage people. Again, it boils back down to that idea of adaptability. Not everyone is equally motivated at all times in their lives by the same considerations. And so being aware of the range of tools we have available to us as godly communicators is very, very beneficial, because then we can use the right tool for the particular task that we have in front of us. We can speak in a way that connects to the person or persons to whom we are in fact speaking. In other words, one of the lessons here is that there isn't one right way to talk, to explain things, to say what needs to be said. The right way to say something depends on the circumstances. It depends on who's speaking and to whom they are speaking. Now, don't misunderstand that. I'm not saying that what is right to be said changes. The truth is the truth. And what we need to communicate is always the truth. But in no single instance of communication are we going to communicate all of the truth. We're always picking and choosing. We're picking what truth to communicate, and we're also, of course, picking how to communicate it. And one of the lessons that we're discovering from comparing and contrasting a communication with an individual, Timothy, versus communications to groups of people, is that there is this adaptability, there is this flexibility in how you present the particular truth that needs to be gotten across. And so what this basically summons godly communicators to do is to cultivate the gift of understanding somebody else, of being able to see things from their point of view, of being able, at least in a broad way, to anticipate how something will be heard, so that you can make sure not only that you're speaking the truth, but so that you can make sure that you're speaking the truth in a way that is likely to connect, in a way that is likely to get across to them. We're all familiar with this principle, because the reality is that we do not speak to a 4-year-old child, a 40-year-old man, or a 90-year-old woman in exactly the same way. We adapt our communications a little bit based on age, based on that element of their situation in life. So I'm not saying anything radical or drastic. All I'm saying is that there are other elements of a situation in life: understanding, knowledge, character, personality, other factors as well as age that enter into godly and effective communication. Obviously, this means we need wisdom. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally, without upbraiding, and it shall be given him. Amen. Until next time, may God bless you.